Hello and welcome to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, May 23rd, and I am your host, Jenny Rempel. I am joined in studio today by Allison Cole, who is here operating the controls. And I want to thank our other hosts for contributing to the program this week digitally, Cynthia, who helped with the events, and Alyssa, who also contributed to the program, and of course, Jackie, who actually pre-recorded one of the interviews that you're going to hear on the show today. Tim is away this week. Today's show, we are featuring an interview with Jeff Matthews, a local activist and one of the organizers of the local Empty the Tanks protest that's going to be happening here in Vancouver. Empty the Tanks is a worldwide event which is dedicated to ending the captivity of marine mammals and cetaceans. Later on in the program, we're also going to be interviewing Gabriella Cowperthwaite, the director of the documentary Blackfish, which also features the issue of cetaceans in captivity and highlights the plight of these animals. We are also going to be discussing some local events happening here in Vancouver and sharing some cetacean-related music with you today. But first, I want to inform you that Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are here bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement towards a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on CFRO 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. Welcome to the program. This week we have a number of events coming up for you animal advocates located here in Vancouver. First off, on May 24th, the March Against Monsanto is happening. The march is going to start at 10 a.m. at the Vancouver Art Gallery, which is located at 750 Hornby Street. There's going to be face painting, live music, and a lot of fundraising raffles, with all of the prizes being donated by local non-GMO businesses. GMO, of course, stands for genetically modified organisms, so this is definitely an event for anyone that's interested in their food and how our food is made and where it comes from. So that, of course, will be happening in the Vancouver Art Gallery on Saturday, May 24th here in Vancouver. For more information, you can go to facebook.com/MAMVancouver for more info. Later on Saturday, May 24th, the second annual International Empty the Tanks protest is happening outside of the Vancouver Aquarium from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. The Vancouver Aquarium is located inside of the historic Stanley Park here in Vancouver. But if you're not a local activist, this is a worldwide event, so there's events happening all over the world in tons of countries, so there might be one near you if you check out their website, emptythetanksworldwide.com, for more information. You can also visit their Facebook page, facebook.com/emptythetanksworldwide, for more information on these global events. Now, here in Vancouver, they want to make it really clear that this is a family-friendly event. So families and children are encouraged to come. There's going to be face painting and a mermaid who will be taking pictures. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So we recommend that everyone come join this event and speak up for cetaceans and marine mammals that are in captivity. If you want to learn more about this issue, on Thursday, May 29th at 7 p.m., there will be a 3-screening of Blackfish, which will be hosted by Liberation BC. The screening will be held at the Vancouver Public Library in the Alice McKay Room. The Vancouver Public Library is located at 350 West Georgia Street, and of course the movie Blackfish is all about the story of Tilikum, a performing killer whale that has killed several people during his life, which is still ongoing. He lives in captivity now at SeaWorld. So that's a great background movie if you're looking to learn more about the cetaceans and captivity issue that we'll be talking more about during the rest of the program today. There are some weekly ongoing events happening as well in the city. Every Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., Liberation BC is hosting the weekly chicken vigils. So every Friday, activists gather at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street, outside of the storage facility and slaughterhouse, from 7 to 9 a.m. There are signs for drivers and leaflets for pedestrians that bring attention to what's happening behind the walls of this slaughterhouse. So the more people that come out, the more attention can be brought to this issue and the more animals we can help. So if you have any questions, you can contact mary-chris@liberationbc.org. Another often occurring event we have is the Vancouver Animal Defense League's campaign asking Brooklyn Clothing Company to go fur-free. Brooklyn Clothing Company, of course, is a store that sells fur, including the trim of coyotes and raccoon dogs, and these animals are abused and then killed. So they're asking for this cruelty to be ended. So you can join them every Friday evening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. They meet at the Blends Coffee Shop at 508 Davie Street and then walk as a group to Brooklyn Clothing Company. And you can check out the Vancouver Animal Defense League Facebook page for more information on that. If you have an event you would like us to share on the show, please email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/animalvoicesvancouver, for more information and to give us the lowdown on your upcoming event. You are listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Related to our events, our next interview is specifically about the Empty the Tanks event, which is happening around the world and here in Vancouver this weekend. That interview is coming up for you right now, and later in the program we'll be talking with Gabriella Cowperthwaite, the director of the documentary film Blackfish, which is available now on Netflix and is screening in Vancouver this Thursday. So I'm joined here today by Jeff Matthews, local activist and one of the organizers of Empty the Tanks here in Vancouver. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
So can you tell us, what is Empty the Tanks?
So Empty the Tanks is a worldwide movement. It's happening, there's a protest happening in, I think, 52 cities around the world. And the mission is to end the captivity of whales and dolphins.
And why protest at the Vancouver Aquarium?
Well, Vancouver Aquarium is still... one of the, one of only two places in Canada that has yet to clue in that this is no longer morally acceptable to keep these animals in captivity.
And maybe you could respond to some common claims that I've heard that are made by the aquarium and their supporters in response to these types of actions.
You hear an awful lot from the aquarium that, for instance, their dolphins are rescued. So they claim that these dolphins were rescued from fishing nets off the coast of Japan. And then they got these dolphins from an aquarium there called the Enoshima Aquarium. So they like everyone to know that these are rescues. In actual fact, though... this aquarium that they bought these dolphins from, Enoshima, is well known to be involved in one of the drive hunts there, much like the drive hunt that you see in the movie The Cove, where dolphins are brutally slaughtered after they take the ones that they want to sell to marine parks. And it's well known that Enoshima is involved in the Fudo drive hunt. So it's commonly believed that by Vancouver Aquarium taking these two dolphins off the hands of Enoshima, they made room in their pool so that Enoshima could take more from that drive hunt. So it's, what the point we're trying to get across to people is that, if you make a space in your tanks for dolphins or whales, somehow those have to be filled. And generally that means that these animals are going to come from the wild. And if it's dolphins, that generally means that they'll come from drive hunts.
And what about how the aquarium is saying that there's no current plans for expansion?
Well, we know they're expanding. They're spending $100 million on their expansion, and that includes larger pools. In the past, John Nightingale, the CEO, has publicly said that they will be expanding. They will be bringing in more belugas. He's tried to backtrack in recent months as the heat's been turned up, so he's been flip-flopping on it, and now their claim is that they'll bring back some of the three belugas that they currently have on loan to SeaWorld.
And what about people who say that the aquarium is a non-profit, that it's involved in conservation efforts, that sort of thing?
Well, I'm sure it is. The issue isn't whether the Vancouver Aquarium does good things. It's just that they do this one thing that we think is very bad. And this is the issue that we're trying to get across. And you know, the aquarium will equate all of the good work they do with keeping these animals in captivity. And in actual fact, there's no reason these two have to be linked.
And so, why don't you support keeping marine mammals in captivity?
Well, I think we know enough about these animals now that we know that they don't do well in captivity. You know, you hear scientists like Paul Spong, for instance, who was the first person to study orcas in captivity. You know, very quickly in studying those back in the 1970s, he realized that these animals were far too intelligent, that they didn't do well in captivity, and they needed their freedom to roam in the ocean and to satisfy the instincts that nature gave them. And so I think it's well accepted that that these animals don't do well. If you've seen blackfish, it's clear that you know, orcas suffer from a host of problems, and the same is true with dolphins and belugas.
Speaking of animals not doing well in captivity, there was a story recently published in the Georgia Strait that was talking about some sea lions that were sent from the Vancouver Aquarium to Marineland on the East Coast, which are blind and dead, now. Can you comment on that story at all?
Yeah, this is really troubling because, you know, the Vancouver Aquarium likes to tout their rescue program as an example of some of the good work that they do. And they always seem to link it to keeping dolphins and whales in captivity, even though the vast majority of the animals they rescue are seals and sea lions. Now, these five seals that were sent to Marineland, we are under the impression that they were all rescued. Now, apparently, some of these were animals that had been rescued, and some of them were animals that they had taken from the wild for research purposes, and had finished researching them, researching with them. So they sent five of them to Marineland, and Phil Demers, who's otherwise known as the Walrus Whisperer, one of the Marineland whistleblowers, came out and stated that of these five, one of them died, and the other four are blind or have severe eye problems due to high levels of ozone that Marineland was keeping in the waters. And where it's troubling from the Vancouver Aquarium standpoint is that Marineland's history and in terms of taking care of these animals isn't very good, and it hasn't been very good for a long time. Vancouver Aquarium would know this before they sent those animals there. You know, really, they should have thought twice before they did it, but they did it anyways. And now they, even though there were problems and they knew about them at the time, because this happened a couple years ago, they still fail to take any kind of responsibility. They say that, you know, it's not their problem, that these animals weren't in their hands when the problems happened. And they're even claiming now that these animals are completely healthy, despite the fact that we've got four whistleblowers who have said otherwise. So.
And this isn't the only other park that the aquarium is connected to. You mentioned that they have some animals on loan to SeaWorld. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so you know, another fact that most people aren't made aware of when they enter the Vancouver Aquarium, you know, people they focus on their dolphins and how these dolphins were apparently rescued, but they never tell you exactly where the belugas came from. Now, they took a number of belugas. I can't remember the exact number, but they took in the 90s. They took a bunch of belugas from the wild near Churchill, Manitoba, and that's where most of the belugas they have now are from. One is captive born. Now they have two belugas in their tanks in the Vancouver Aquarium, but three are located in SeaWorld. So they've got one at SeaWorld San Antonio, one at SeaWorld San Diego, and one in SeaWorld Florida. And a couple of these, you know, a couple of these belugas have seen an awful lot. They've gotten a lot of frequent flyer miles flying back and forth between the various aquariums and marine parks, basically being used as breeders.
What does that mean, being used as a breeder?
So it's well known amongst the community of aquariums and marine parks that have belugas that right now the genetic diversity of the captive population, it's not diverse enough to maintain a healthy stock. So they're going to need to take some from the wild. But it's common practice for these aquariums to trade animals all the time, so that they can, so that they're not inbreeding their animals. But that puts these animals at an awful lot of stress. I mean, if you've ever seen the size of the tank that these belugas get shipped in, there's barely any room for them to move, and they're on, 6, 7 hour flights between here and, say, Florida. It's not a lot of fun for them.
So, related back to the protest, I'm curious, does this Empty the Tanks event happening on Saturday, does it have a specific goal? What are you trying to do at the event?
Well, our goals are several fold. I mean, first of all, we want to continue to raise awareness that Vancouver Aquarium still has animals there in captivity that we think it's cruel and it is morally wrong. We'd also like to draw attention to the fact that they do have plans to increase the population of belugas and quite likely dolphins that they're keeping at the aquarium. Now, what we'd like to see is we'd like to see that these animals all moved into sea pens and at least a place where they could, feel the natural rhythms of the ocean again, possibly be rehabilitated and released into the wild if that's possible. As you may know, the Parks Board and Mayor Gregor Robertson have all called for a phase out of whales and dolphins at Vancouver Aquarium, and we'd have to wait and see what the details are on this phase out. But to us, that sounds like it's going in the right direction. So, obviously, we like to show them that there's a lot of will in this city to see that something like that happen.
And why is the park board important in all this?
Well, the Park Board is the government body that has the jurisdiction to make changes at the aquarium. Now, the aquarium is a not-for-profit. It's separate from the city. It's not owned by the city at all. But they are on land that is leased to them from the city of Vancouver. And as part of Stanley Park, that puts them squarely in the Park Board jurisdiction. So the Park Board can use animal control bylaws. They could put terms in the lease. I guess that's for up to them to decide the mechanism that they do it. But it is encouraging to know that we've had a couple of the members of the Parks Board already come forward and say they'd like to see an end to cetacean captivity in Stanley Park.
So back to the Empty the Tanks event that's going to happen. Can you tell us a little bit about what the program is? What's going to happen at the event?
Well, we're trying to make this a family-friendly event because in the past we've had lots of kids come out. There was a kids' protest that happened there about a month and a half ago, and this is an issue that kids really seem to resonate with. They understand. I last time we were there, I was talking to a family who was wondering what was going on, and they had just come out of the aquarium, and I asked there's a probably an 8 or 9 year old girl there, and I asked her, "So, how did you like the aquarium?" And she said, "Oh, it was fun." And I said, "What was your favorite part?" And she said, "The belugas." Right? And she said, "Yeah, I was really excited to see the belugas." And I asked her, "So, how do you think the belugas felt?" And she said, "Sad." And I think there's an awful lot of kids that that feel the same way. So we want to make sure this is a family-friendly event. Kids are welcome, families are welcome. We have mermaids coming, we have face painting, and it should be a good time and a good time to stand up and register your support for the end of captivity of whales and dolphins at the aquarium.
And so the event is happening this Saturday at the aquarium. What time and where should people meet the group?
Yeah, it starts at 2 o'clock, and it's outside the Vancouver Aquarium. If you show up around 2, you'll see you should see a crowd gathering, and some of the organizers already there. It is happening the same day as the Monsanto March, so we're hoping that we'll get a lot of people that after they march against Monsanto, that they'll march on over to the aquarium and join us there.
That's awesome. Lots of marching going on.
Yeah, it's going to be a big day.
Sounds pretty busy for a lot of folks. Speaking
Yeah.
of which, I'm curious, how did you personally get involved in all this? Why are you volunteering your time for this cause?
I've been a volunteer with Sea Shepherd for a while now. And of course, whales and dolphins are an issue that's are pretty close to my heart. And you know, you look at Vancouver's got a real history with whales. I mean, you know, Greenpeace was founded here, and you know, they made their mark defending whales in the Pacific. Vancouver Aquarium itself was the first place to, you know, have a captive orca. I mean, you can go right outside our waters here and see wild orcas, and you know, most of the population of captive orcas have come from the population that is, you know, living right outside our door here, sadly enough. So we do have a real history with whales, and I think that you know, for me, I think it would be very symbolic if Vancouver were to just end captivity of whales and dolphins once and for all. I think it would be very symbolic for the rest of the world to see that, you know, this place that is so in touch with whales and has such a history with them is among the first to finally say no.
And related to all of this action that's going on, what do you say to people who want to visit aquariums or might want to take their kids to a place like that? What would your response be to those types of families?
Well, of course, we'd ask them to think again and try and explain to them, you know, why we feel it's wrong. You know, a lot of people won't, you know, they won't agree. You know, granted, there is a bit of moral judgment involved in this, but you know, people that insist on going, we'd ask that they ask the right questions to the trainers in that. And what value is there beyond entertainment of keeping these animals in there? And I'm pretty sure that the answer they'd get back would be nothing but greenwashing. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jeff. Jeff is a local activist and one of the organizers of Empty the Tanks here in Vancouver, which will be happening this Saturday, May 24th, right in front of the Vancouver Aquarium. Thank you so
Great,
much,
thanks very
Jeff.
much. Thank you.
Tune in every Friday afternoon from 2 until 2:30 on CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, where we bring you the Community Living Show. Our half-hour show is produced by the disabled community, showcasing for BC self-advocates with lots of interesting and fun content, including engaging interviews with special guests with special needs. Join host Dave, Lori, Kelly, and friends every Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, because you've got a friend in community living and co-op radio. You got a friend in me.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada.
When you look into their eyes, you know somebody is home.
They're an animal that possesses great spiritual power, not to be meddled with.
Orange County Sheriff's Office.
We need SO to respond for a dead person at SeaWorld. A whale has eaten one of the trainers.
Tilikumbo is the one that went after her.
Don is the senior trainer here at Shamu Stadium.
She captured what it means to be a SeaWorld trainer, that it made me realize what happened to her really could have happened to anyone.
I've been expecting somebody to be killed by Tilikum.
We weren't told much about it, other than it was trainer error.
It didn't just happen. It's not a singular event. You have to go back to understand this.
The speedboats herded them in, and they could just pick out the young ones.
This is the worst thing that I've ever done.
When Tilikum arrived at SeaWorld, he was twice as large as the next animal.
We stored these whales in what we call a module, which was 20 feet across and 30 feet deep, and the lights were all turned out.
Probably led to what I think is a psychosis.
Whales in captivity are all psychologically traumatized. It's not just Tilikum.
If you were in a bathtub for 25 years, don't you think you'd get a little psychotic?
Dawn would tell you that it was her mistake.
They blamed her.
But
just a bold-faced lie.
I was just instructed to get rid of the tape.
The industry has a vested interest in spinning these. That sells a lot of Shamu dolls. It sells a lot of tickets at the gate.
There's no record of an orca doing any harm in the wild.
That audio clip was from the trailer for the 2013 documentary Blackfish, directed by Gabriella Cowperthwaite. The film premiered at the 2013 Sundance Film Festival in January of last year, but since then it's been picked up by CNN Films and also Netflix for a wider release, so you can check it out on your computer now. The film focuses on Tilikum, an orca that has been held captive by SeaWorld and a number of other companies, some of which were actually based right here off the coast of British Columbia. So this animal's been held in captivity for quite a long time and has caused the deaths of several human beings. And the documentary is a great expose into not only the life of this one killer whale, Tilikum, but also into the lives of many orca whales and other creatures that have to live in captivity. Here at Animal Voices, we were lucky enough to be able to do an interview with the director, Gabriella Cowperthwaite, last year on our show that aired in July. The interview was conducted by one of our hosts, and I'm excited to share it with you today, so stay tuned for that interview. But first, I want to share with you a new segment that I like to call Jenny Learns Something New. Jenny learns a new thing. So this week, I was interested in learning about whales in captivity. So a word that comes up a lot in this discussion is cetacean. So if you're not aware, cetacean is a word that means marine mammals. Marine mammals are animals like whales, dolphins, and porpoises. It comes from the Latin word cetus, which is used in the biological names, and it means whale. The original meaning is large sea animal, but that's a more general word. It's also connected to the ancient Greek word kitos, meaning whale, or any huge fish or sea monster. In Greek mythology, the monster Perseus was called Ceto and is depicted by the constellation Cetus. Cetology is a branch of marine biology which is associated with the study of cetaceans. All of those facts and information comes to us courtesy of Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia that anyone can contribute and add to. So I hope all those things are true. Which kind of brings me to our next thing, our animal activist tip of the week. This is an everyday thing that you can do in your daily life to help animals. So this week's animal activist tip of the week is to learn about animal issues. If you spend a few minutes every day looking through news stories or reading up on things on Wikipedia and sites like that to educate yourself about animals, you can be a more effective and more informed advocate for animals. I really like to keep in touch with current events, and one way that I do this is I've set up a Google Alert system. So you can actually go on Google, and it's a free service, and they'll send you an email breakdown whenever stories are published that are related to keywords like animal rights or veganism or any words you want. So if you're interested in following a certain issue, like maybe cetaceans or whales in captivity, you can just type that in and Google will do the work for you and research whenever news stories or information related to those topics are published, and they'll send you a digest in your email. So that's a great way to keep informed on what's happening for animals, both locally and abroad. Kind of like listening to Animal Voices. Once again, you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Next, we are bringing you our interview with Gabriella Cowperthwaite, the director of the documentary film Blackfish. This is actually a rebroadcast, as the interview was conducted last year in July for our program at that time by our host, Jackie. So, I hope you enjoy this rebroadcast of our interview with Gabriella Cowperthwaite, the director of the documentary film Blackfish.
Blackfish, I started Blackfish because I had a question. When I heard about the top trainer, Don Brancho, who was killed by a killer whale, Tilikum, in SeaWorld of 2010, I was very confused. I didn't understand why something like that would have happened. So I am, don't come from animal activism. I sort of, I'm a mother who took her twin boys to SeaWorld, maybe five years ago. And, so I really came at the documentary and started the, embarked on making the documentary because I couldn't understand how something like that could have happened. I thought that killer whales were our friends and they were sort of, you know, altogether, I'd say, you know, if there was a version of captivity that I thought was more humane, it would have been SeaWorld's. I always thought that park was clean, and the trainers and the animals, everybody sort of looks happy and symbiotic. And I would have thought that the animals, you know, were tremendously well cared for in that environment. So anyway, I was confused and started making a documentary because I actually just had so many questions.
Of course. I mean, it's amazing what you can see and how things are often different behind the scenes. Why do you feel that orcas in exclusion, or I guess in particular compared to other cetaceans, were the most important animals in captivity to be addressed in this film?
I don't necessarily. I think that was just happened to be the story. As I said, I didn't come in sort of with you know, an agenda or a focus of, you know, here I need to change this industry to help this animal. I didn't come at it from that perspective. I came at it from a perspective of trying to figure out why this incident happened. So I chose that single story of you know, Tillicum, essentially, and stayed kind of with that storyline because I thought it would be a tremendously digestible way for the mainstream public to come to understand what it means for a killer whale or a highly intelligent sentient animal to be in captivity. So rather than kind of coming at it with, you know, my intention is to, you know, reveal the ills of captivity, I thought, you know, I know tons of people have done things like that, and sometimes it lands, but sometimes it lands just with the people who already knew these issues were important. My goal was to tell a story and try to get people who had never given two thoughts about the fact that they went to SeaWorld, people much like me. And so I thought, if I take an approach of telling a story and not manipulating any information, not tossing in information that doesn't relate to the story to try and get people to feel something and do something, then you know, I didn't want to take that approach. I didn't necessarily think that would be effective. So I stuck with a single narrative, and my hope is that people kind of who never gave it two thoughts are, I guess, urged to think about this issue, but they entered into it in a different way. They entered into it, you know, by means of trying to figure out and trying to learn about Tillicum and what could have made him do this. It's almost a different approach, I think, you know?
And that's such an important issue, obviously, as we learn in the film. I found that some of the most heartbreaking scenes of the film were the separation of the orca families, the separation of mother and child, which is unfortunately so common in many animal exploitation industries. As a mother yourself, how did learning about all of this and seeing the videos affect you?
It was tremendously, you know, difficult for me to, I guess, learn that these things go on and continue to go on fairly frequently in all marine parks. I think in the back of your mind, you just want to imagine that the upper management or the decision makers at these parks, are certainly, you know, out to make a buck, out to, you know, keep the business model alive, but they would certainly not stand by for allowing their whales to go through tremendous grief, you know, or angst or anything like that. They wouldn't like that, that they wouldn't want that. To learn that goes on and that people know it goes on, and hear, you know, you hear the mothers grieving, and you know that everything you know about these animals is that they need to be with their social bond, you know, they need to socially bond with their families, and to know that people are you know, purposely splitting families, and because they want a certain look for certain shows in certain parks, was a profoundly disappointing moment for me, because it was, to me, that's just wrong, and I guess every way that something can be wrong.
Yeah, you just said it there. And there's a deep feeling of corruption throughout this film as the various aquaparks aim to hide or disguise all the deaths and injuries to trainers as drowning or trainer error. How is it so easy and possible for these parks to hide the truth from everyone when the autopsies told such a different story?
Right. Well, I think it's interesting. I think there's two things that are happening. I think the first thing is that the people who are in these parks have been perpetuating kind of a certain story, a certain storyline that trainers are safe and whales are happy and their animals are happy. And, you know, I think that they've been doing that and kind of honing that story and telling themselves that story, to be perfectly honest, so they can kind of justify, you know, going to work every day and what it is that they do on a daily basis. And that story has become so powerful and ingrained, I think, in their culture that is their belief system. That they think they know what the whales want. They think they know what the whales need. They know they're doing a show, but they still think this is probably the best place for killer whales because the whales are just very loved by the trainers. I mean, that part's certainly true. But, you know, I think it's just storytelling. I think we get good at telling ourselves stories to make us justify the things that we do on a daily basis. The second part is I think we as audience members or passive consumers, which I sadly considered myself, you know, consider myself having played a role in, you know, we don't hold the fire to their feet ever, because I think we actually also want to believe the story. We actually want to believe that we embarked on this crazy mad science experiment to put killer whales in captivity, but that we made a friend in the process and they loved us back now. And we're just one happy family. I think that's what we tell ourselves. So I think we get anesthetized and don't want to listen to the truth. And if we hear the truth, we kind of brush it under the carpet because it doesn't square with our story. So I think in some ways we're sort of all to blame.
Mm-hmm. And I like how you said passive consumers, because that's always such an issue with all animal rights issues in our world today.
Yeah.
If these whales are released from aquaparks, how quickly do they tend to acclimate to their new free environment, and what kind of process is needed to release these whales or find them sanctuary?
Well, it's interesting. So a lot of people just say, okay, so why can't you just sort of put the killer whales back in the ocean and, you know, in the wild? And the fact is that they, you know, a good many of them wouldn't survive because they're, you know, in captivity, they're hopped up on antibiotics. They don't know how to eat live fish, you know, or chase down and hunt their own food. So for a number of reasons, you know, and some of them are sick. Some of them are not doing well. Like Tilikum is just not doing well. So, you know, I think that what the alternatives are, are C-10, as you kind of mentioned, the sanctuary, which is essentially the cordoned-off cove. You sort of place a net and kind of cordon off a little part of the ocean so you can kind of semi-release them and put them in there, but you can watch and make sure that their health is intact and whatever. You can feed them dead fish if you need to, but at least they're in a natural sort of ocean environment, and it's just a bit of a more dignified way to go about life. So that's kind of what the alternative is. Now, even that would take a tremendous amount of training, right? You'd have to sort of very slowly teach them how to eat live fish, take them off of antibiotics. There's, you know, a lot of work, and I think, you know, a lot of research went into kind of the Keiko story. And Keiko was incredibly sick and was in a park in Mexico and had been there all his life and then was released to his pod, basically was able to find his original pod group. And even though he didn't live forever, like everyone would have hoped, he still found his way to be able to live out his remaining years in the wild. So, you know, I think there's an answer to your question. I think, you know, it does take a lot of work. And a lot of research would have to go in what to do with each individual whale, because each one is very different. But essentially, these are all alternatives for them. And I see that some of the marine parks like SeaWorld, who have tremendous financial resources, would be some of the places that I think should play a role in some of these semi-releases. And a lot of people say that there are plenty of whales that actually could acclimate and could be not only in a sea pen, but really released to the wild after, you know, tremendous amount of retraining and all that. So it's a little, you know, complicated, but it's certainly one of the best alternatives, I think, put forth right now.
Wonderful. That gives us some hope, for
yeah.
sure. Most of the traders interviewed seem to have witnessed or been aware of some horrific events and as such left their positions as trainers. Can you tell me if any of them are currently working to help orcas and how?
All of the people in Blackfish, in my film, the former trainers, are all heavily involved in basically trying to, stop sort of animals and entertainment. And they would like very much, you know, they're also sort of putting forth everything from the sea pen alternative to non-personhood, non-human rights for these animals, you know, giving them basically giving them rights and treating kind of learning to sort of view them as individuals. So there's a campaign for that. There's one ex-trainer who is actually, he does rehabilitation and release in Laguna Beach. And he, you know, mostly works with sea lions and seals, but, you know, other cetaceans as well. So they each have a hand in it, but, you know, I think for the most part, everybody is striving towards just, trying to educate the public and helping sort of create alternatives like the sea pen alternative, putting forth the end of captive breeding in marine parks, which is a way to sort of stop, you know, the marine parks from continuing to have killer whales for the next 80 years. So everybody's got a hand in it. It's kind of inspiring to see that.
It's very inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing that. And what message is this film intended to convey to the viewers?
You know, I think what I want, you know, in terms of a message, you know, I have the message that I came away with after my 2 years of research and working on the film. And, you know, my feelings, my personal feelings are that killer whales should not be in captivity, that this goes for all. Rules should go for all, highly intelligent, sentient animals. They are not suitable to captivity. And that's, you know, this goes for elephants as well and primates. So I feel very strongly about that. I certainly think that animals for entertainment needs to go away. To me, I call that the lowest rung on the ethical totem pole. I don't think there's a place for that anymore. So those are my feelings, you know, but what I tried to do with the film was to not deliver and hand spoon feed a message. What I tried to do was tell a story so that everybody can have their own revelations, so that everybody can feel what they feel based on a fact that happened, based on the truth that they learn within this story. And, you know, that means when they walk away from the film, they can kind of own what they feel about it. They can kind of, you know, they were armed with information, and now they can come away and make their own decisions for themselves and their families. And, you know, I hope that those decisions are that they don't, patronize places like SeaWorld anymore. My hope is that they encourage places like that to shift their paradigms into rehab and release or sea pen scenarios. That's my hope. But, you know, I try very hard not to, you know, deliver a message because I think people like to come to their own conclusions and make their own life decisions based on just the facts, just based on a truthful story. Yeah, so my hope is that they feel something authentic and do something great with that feeling.
And I think that's really important what you said. People do not like to get spoon-fed, you know, or told what to do. They like to come to that conclusion on their own, which is why film advocacy is so important. I know it's had a huge role in
right.
my life. Yeah.
Well, and Jackie, it's funny because I also talk about it as an inner teenager because I know I'm a little bit like this. When I am told, you know, or if I feel like someone is sort of manipulating information or, I don't know, not even manipulating information, but sort of telling me what it is that I should do or how it is that I should feel, it's an inner teenager. I think we just naturally sort of resist and just sort of say, well, you know, I'm smelling an agenda here for whatever reason. I think that we like for people to show us the truth, to tell us the truth and show us the story, and then we ourselves like to have a sense of agency in what it is that we do with that. You know? Like, you want it to be your idea that you decide to not go to SeaWorld. You don't want someone to sit there and scream at you telling you, you know, you are part of the evil if you go there. I just think that because I discovered this very purely in a pure fashion, I owed it sort of to my audience to let them discover it in the same way that I discovered it. And that is through a truthful, fact-driven story, something that happened, you know? I guess I just think that has a chance of being more potentially effective for more people.
I know there's a lot of anticipation, at least in the animal rights community, about Blackfish. What kind of response have you received so far about this film?
We have received great responses. People, I think the people that knew these issues are happy that the issues are going mainstream now through this movie. Since we were, you know, at Sundance and then were picked up by theatrical and broadcast by Magnolia Films, Magnolia Pictures and Skin & Films. So I think people are excited that that the film might have some sort of mainstream platforms. But I think they're, you know, for the people that didn't know any of these issues, they're pretty shocked. People are very shocked. A lot of people say, I never knew this was going on at that park that we all have fond memories of from our childhood. So I think it's a lot of revelatory, I think reactions that we've gotten from people. And so that's pretty inspiring.
Great. And that kind of leads us into our final question here. Can you tell me what the plans are for getting this film out there so as many people as possible can see this?
Yeah, well, we have, overall, again, we've been picked up by Magnolia Pictures, and so it'll go to theaters. In the U.S. this summer, we were picked up by Kino Smith, so we're going to be in the theaters this summer in Canada. So, and then we have, Dogwoof in the U.K. Is going to be releasing it this summer. So, we're going to be in a bunch of countries as well, other countries. So we're sort of getting the international theatrical stage this summer. On July 26th is really the big release date. And then we go to broadcast. So then we go to CNN Films in the States and then various other broadcast stations like BBC Storyville in the UK across the world. So that's a nice sort of mainstream platform there. And then, you know, in addition to that, I'm hoping that we can do educational screenings and I'm hoping kids come to this. We're working closely with some organizations as well and hoping that, you know, the word can kind of get out there that this is a film that can hopefully, make you change the way you've been living your life just a tiny bit. That's my hopeful thing, but, you know, I would just be excited if the people that did see it responded positively to it. and tell their friends.
Absolutely. I know I'll be definitely spreading the word about the screenings in Vancouver. Thank you so much, Gabriella, for joining me today to speak about this wonderful and very important film, Blackfish.
I so appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was our interview with Gabriella Cowperthwaite, the director of the documentary Blackfish, which will be screening here in Vancouver on Thursday, May 28th, for your viewing pleasure. The screening is free, and it will be held at the Vancouver Public Library, as hosted by Liberation BC.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on next week's show, that is May 30th, where Allison will be hosting the show, and she's going to be talking with the author of Farmageddon, The True Cost of Cheap Meat, about the issues in his book like global industrial farming and other topics related to animals used in our food systems. In the meantime, we at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. You can visit animalvoices.org, where you can download our shows as podcasts, including today's program that you just heard. You can also like our page on Facebook, that's facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at @AnimalVoicesYVR. And we want to hear from you. You can send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or by emailing us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We are now closing the show with a song from world-famous children's musician Raffi. The song is called Baby Beluga, and according to Wikipedia, this song was actually inspired by Raffi's visit to the Vancouver Aquarium, where he got to witness some of the belugas. It's somewhat ironic because the song talks about baby belugas being free in the deep blue sea, however, the aquarium's belugas that Raffi witnessed are not free and are not in the deep blue sea. Regardless, though, thank you so much for joining us this week on Animal Voices. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, which is coming up next. And remember to be kind to the animals. See you next week here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada.
Shall we sing Baby Beluga together? A one and a two and a three and a four and ba 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 da 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 da. Baby beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above, sea below, and the little white whale on the go. Baby beluga. Is the water warm? Is your mama home with you? So happy. Way down yonder where the dolphins play, where you dive and splash all day. Waves roll in and the waves roll out. See the water squirting out of your spout. Baby beluga, baby beluga. Sing your little song, sing for all your friends, we like to hear you. Everybody! When it's dark, your home and your bed. You curl up snug in your waterbed. The moon is shining, the stars are out. Good night, little whale, good night. Baby beluga, oh baby beluga. With tomorrow's sun, another day's begun. You'll soon be waking. Baby beluga in the deep blue sea. Swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above, sea below, and a little white whale on the go. You're just a little white whale on the go.
Thank you. Thank you very much.